You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and here are today's topics. Liverpool and Manchester City's entertaining 2-2 draw at Anfield. Andros Townsend's Cristiano Ronaldo impersonation at Old Trafford. Chelsea leaving it late to take all 3 points against Southampton. Tottenham ending their losing streak with a win over Villa. And we will discuss the first sacking of the season, Cisco Munoz out at Watford. That's what's coming up in today's episode. Okay, Robbie Earle, what a game. What a game at Anfield. Liverpool 2, Manchester City 2. So much to talk about, so much to enjoy. All I know is that when we came back into the studio, Rob, after the game had finished, it was such a exhilarating game full of, I think my first comment was like, brilliant game, mate. Brilliant managers doing their thing, brilliant players and brilliant goals. What a sensational advert for the Premier League as we got to listen to the managers afterwards saying that. And I think it was Pep, wasn't it, saying this is why this it is kind really of is the best league in the world. What a game, my friend. Where do you want to start with it?
I want to start with my sadness, and I won't talk for you on this, but my sadness at that. I used to play in the Premier League. And I used to run up and down and tackle and things.
Me too.
And it looked nothing like what I saw today, Rob. Today was like football of the highest club level. It was like a Champions League, top Champions League game. There was athletes all over the pitch. There was magnificent skill levels. There was strength, there was balance, there was speed, there was tactical know-how. It had all the ingredients. And I know some people might say, well, it was 0-0 at half-time. I thought it was a brilliant game of football for Manchester City's possession, their movement, their understanding of what they do, the cohesion and between each other. I thought it was outstanding stuff. And second half, maybe less football, more goals, more drama, some brilliant finishing. We'll talk about Mo Salah and just how he continues to be playing at another level. But more than anything, Rob, I want to say just appreciation of a brilliant game of football. You know, we can talk tactics, we talk about points, and we can talk, but that's what the Premier League is all about. What we saw today was all the good elements of what the Premier League's about.
In the pre-game show, Rob, we talked about a flank, a key flank, and it was Manchester City's left against Liverpool's right, because there was key matchups there that we weren't really sure who is going to win out. First of all, Rob, let's just rewind a little bit. In terms of Man City's lineup, again, like Pep,
false nine, take your pick.
It's me, I'm the unlucky one that has to try and read his team and put a formation up on our screen for our broadcast, and it's hard to read him. We've never seen Grealish play the false nine for Manchester City. That's what he did. When you expect, well, Grealish is going to be against James Milner, it wasn't. It was Phil Foden up against James Milner, Rob. And wasn't that the key matchup that really Man City didn't capitalize on the first 45 minutes because they dominated. Phil Foden dominated James Milner in that spot.
Well, the funny thing is, and the thing I'll say is, I have got to stop trying to think what Pep thinks, because this guy, you know, is just on another planet. Because the interesting thing, Rob, is you kind of think, okay, Grealish is a false nine. It's got, and I think we talked about an early pod that he could play in there. He's got good control. He draws people in. He's got good appreciation of teammates and movement and space. But what we thought was, got to play Grealish against Milner. Grealish against Milner is a really great tie-up. Yeah, he sticks Phil Foden there, and Phil Foden gives James Milner as tough a 45 minutes as I can remember Milner playing.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like you scratch your head and like, what's Pep doing? And then you see what occurred, and Foden gets goals and involved in most of their good play, and you kind of think this guy's got it worked out somehow.
Yeah, and I think the shock was at halftime that it was 0-0, and they didn't take advantage of it, and we did wonder whether that might come to haunt them later on.
Yeah.
And the big decision, Rob, I know at halftime, certainly I felt, I think we both agreed that James Milner was, that was a problem.
Yeah.
That was a problem. And we speculated whether they might make a change there. There was a couple of options that he could have done. He actually did do one of the options a little later in the game, but he didn't.
Mm.
Now, we'll get on to talk about the tackles, James Milner, and the potential red card, et cetera, et cetera. Phil Foden did score in that position against Milner. Milner was very close to getting sent off with a second yellow card. Did Jurgen Klopp, Robbie, get away with that decision to keep Milner in that spot? Or was it great management and he fixed the problem at source where it wasn't as much as an issue in the second half?
More the second. I think he fixed the problem with a little bit more press, with a little bit more possession, obviously attacking and pinning City back. I think he trusts James Milner. I think that has a lot to do with it, Rob. I think if it's a different individual, I think if it's Gomez, he drags him off. I think if it's, I don't know, somebody else playing there, I don't think, I think he trusts James Milner.
Even with what happened, Rob?
Even with what happened, he got really lucky
not to go down 10 men.
Absolutely, because of the thing. And listen, you can't preempt what's going to happen. And he was lucky. He should have got a second yellow card for the foul on Bernardo Silva. And it totally changes the game. Mm. Yes, you know, if some will say, oh, well, if that was Frank or Ollie and something, we criticise him. I just think it was interesting when he came after the game and spoke to our boys at the on the touchline. He said, interestingly enough, my half-time talk wasn't, let's change, let's do. He said, let's play like we're supposed to play. Because if we play like we're supposed to play, we won't be having the problems. And so that's him trusting in his processes, him trusting in the players. And they got a better performance second half. And I kind of think that's who Jurgen Klopp is. It is a bit of a gamble, but I think he's prepared to take that gamble, Rob.
Mm. Yeah, it worked out. I mean, no question it worked out. They get a point from the game. On that same flank, the other kind of matchup, again, that we were excited about, Mo Salah, quiet in the first 45 minutes against Joao Cancelo. Again, that part of this flank, the City side of it dominated with some great passes and getting on the ball and looking $1 million. The second half, my friend, things turned around and Mo Salah came alive. How special was, first of all, the assist for Sadio Mane, but then the spectacular piece of art that we saw for Liverpool's second goal?
Well, let me get to Mo Salah in a moment because you pose a good question. I mean, the thing I would say, Rob, then, in contrast to Milner, is you could almost make the same argument of Pep. Did he get it wrong with putting Cancelo against Mo, their best striker, the most dangerous? Because, and you mentioned it all the time, it's all about possession. When City have possession, Cancelo's such a positive force in the team. When they haven't got possession and he's being run at, it can be a liability, as Lee Dixon said, with the sort of lazy challenge he does on the halfway line. Mo Salah breaks free and all of a sudden they're in. So, again, it's about choices, it's about managers, it's about who you trust. Pep believes his team are going to have the ball, so Cancelo's more important to him than maybe a defender who's going to sit back and maybe mark Mo Salah, but not be as involved in that build-up play that we saw was excellent. So those are the dilemmas that these top managers have and they work it out. But you're right, let's concentrate on Mo Salah, Rob, because 6 Premier League goals now, joint high in the league. I think it's 9 goals in his last 9 appearances all competitions. His rate of goals is spectacular. His quality of goals is spectacular. He does it all from a unique position. I don't think we've ever seen a wide player score as many goals as this guy. I can't think of Thierry Henry to a certain degree, but he was more central than
I mean, Ronaldo early in his career was a wide player, got a lot of goals,
He didn't get those goals. He didn't get Salah numbers though. He got goals, but he didn't get. I mean, this guy's ridiculous, Rob. The assist is lovely. Good appreciation of his teammate. Great movement from Mane and Jota to create the opportunity. I mean, the second goal, you've called it a piece of art. I mean, there's so much that's good about it. The speed of it, the touch of it, the feel of it, the understanding, the knowing that he's going to show the defender that I'm going to kick this with my left foot and I'm going to pull my foot back and you're going to have to go to block this. knowing that when he does that, Laporte's going to go to ground, and then you're going to chop it onto his right. Then he chops it onto his right, Rob, and moves quicker than your eyes can see. Yeah. The speed of movement from having his balance on his left foot to gain it onto his right, and then hitting it across a top-class goalkeeper with his weaker right foot, it almost happens in a moment, a days. That's goal scoring at the very highest level. That's Ronaldo and Messi level. That's up there with that.
Yeah, it looks out of this world. The way that he, of course, we're blessed in the Premier League with with so many cameras and these super slow motion cameras where he gets to the ball to shoot, and you look at the strain to make the steps to get to the ball quick enough so he can take the goalkeeper out with a quick early shot and maybe just glance the post that goes in at the far side. It was stunning, and it's like, when you started the podcast, Rob, saying about like when we played, it was like a different. I mean, can you imagine trying to stop that as a defender? So, of course, it wasn't all about Mo Salah.
No.
But again, just when you think he's a little quiet in the first half, he comes alive and changes the match. Just a spectacular goal and an improved Liverpool in the second half, Rob.
Yeah. Yeah.
Through just really a bit more intensity.
Yeah,
got amongst the City players a little bit more, a little bit braver to pass the ball, because they didn't pass the ball in the first half, and City love that. If you don't pass the ball well against them, oh, thanks, we'll have it back, and we're going to pass it well, and you're going to get forced back because of our possession. So it had everything.
Let me get to the James Milner thing, Rob, because this interests me, and you know, sometimes on social media, I think some fans think we have a bias towards Liverpool, which I certainly don't. And I think we always try to be honest and objective. I mean, why does James Milner not get a second yellow for the foul on Bernardo Silva? Is because it's James Milner? Is it because he's been a great lad? He's got a great career. He's well-respected in the game. Does any of that play in? Well, why does James Milner not? And let me think of...
I've got an answer for you, but you go ahead.
Of, I don't know, Eric Dier or, I don't know, somebody in another team who's, that's another silly tackle from him. You know, if that's Granit Xhaka for me gets a second yellow card. So why does James Milner not get a second yellow then?
Because Paul Tierney, the referee, is not very good. Or Paul Tierney made an awful mistake. And to be fair, and I'm sure our listeners and viewers know this, but because it's a second yellow...
Yeah.
It's not VAR check.
Yeah.
Only straight reds are checked by VAR. Yeah. So it's that little... I got to say, I don't like it. I think if it's a second yellow, why not VAR look at it? Because it could lead to a red.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there's a little tweak in the abilities of VAR to get involved. We don't want them involved a lot. But second yellows kind of are a big deal. And that was a stonewall... yellow card, and again, we don't want to see players get sent.
No, that's not what
it was.
We're
an
about,
amazing game of football, and in some ways, everybody's pleased. Well, maybe not the Man City fans were pleased, but it was such a great game of football after that. It's 1-1, Rob.
It's 1-1
with about 25 minutes to go, and City with an extra man, it changes everything. I'm not sure Liverpool can get out, so it was a mistake. And it was a pretty big mistake.
That's a bad error then. In that big game of that magnitude, and we just talked about all the brilliance and the great things in the Premier League, that's not good enough, mate, to be honest. That's not good enough. Because that decides the game. And then, you know, the standard of refereeing, we've got to look at it. And if it means that we have to go to VAR, we should do, because Manchester City should have played 10 men in the final stages of that game. And it could have meant two more points for City that would have put them, you know, top of the table and have beaten Liverpool.
Thinking about the table, Rob, and having a good look now. We've had a few match days. I think at this point, Liverpool and City kind of been looking like they've warmed up lovely.
Yeah, Chelsea top, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, after watching them today, Liverpool and Man City, how does this game, if anything, affect your thoughts on who might win the title?
Reaffirms my choice that I said Manchester City, and I still think... I know everybody's going to keeps on about the false nine. It kind of doesn't hurt me as bad. I know that he changes the rotation of his players up there. Doesn't breed as much familiarity and rhythm as other teams. He's a different manager. He wants a different style. for the first half of the game, Rob, the dominance of possession. And on the basis they played Chelsea last week, disarmed Chelsea, had them on the back foot. For 45 minutes, disarmed Liverpool, kept the crowd quiet and would have taken chances. Their football is grooved, is on point. Players, I think, will get better and rhythm will come a little bit more. I'm happy with City. I still think City are going to be the team to beat.
I said Chelsea, and I think what I think we're gathering, and we're going to get onto Man United in just 1 minute, between these two and Chelsea, it looks like where the Champions is going to come from. Mm. I got to say, looking at this game, these two look revved up to do it. And Liverpool now, they're right up there, mate, with you know, favourites maybe, I don't know. I know the bookmakers still have Man City favourites, or sitting between these two. This game just reassured how good these two look right now, and absolutely ready and fired up for a title challenge. The football from City, the attacking prowess of those front players in Liverpool was special and brilliant. Yeah, absolutely a marvellous, marvellous game of football.
Let's move it to Old Trafford, my friend, where maybe the football wasn't quite as great, but there was plenty of drama. Big personalities, characters on show. Rafa Benitez taking his Everton team that started the season well to Old Trafford. He's won twice there with two different teams. Would have been the first manager to have won there three times with three different sides if he got the win. That possibly could have come with a better decision from Tom Davies taking on the shot. From Manchester United's point of view, Rob, changes in the starting lineup. So Ronaldo rested. Cavani came in. Martial got his second Premier League start when we weren't particularly sure that he might have started with the likes of Lingard and Sancho. Greenwood played on the other flank. Bruno Fernandes as the centre role. And then there was the middle two, wasn't there, of McTominay and Fred in the holding positions. Mm. No Maguire at the back, the usual back four, and De Gea in goal.
Yeah, and listen, they started the game pretty well, Rob, I thought. I thought they moved the ball quickly. I thought they used the flanks. Good possession, good tempo, good energy. The stadium was enjoying the football. But I remember looking up at the clock, and I think it was about kind of 15, 20, 25 minutes, and it just started to drift away a little bit. And this is kind of a familiar pattern. Like, it's like they all know what they want to do. They're all fired up. They start great at Old Trafford. Mm. And then maybe a lack of a real strong foundation in terms of their strategy and game plan, it starts to look a bit not very good. And Martial was a little bit surprising for me. He started on the left-hand side when you've got maybe Jesse Lingard that maybe deserves a start, given what he's done. Got a couple of goals already. Jadon Sancho, whichever way you want to think about it, either needs a bit of a break or give him some more minutes. But it was Martial, and he got the goal. Missed a header early on. But it came down to, again, a piece of brilliance from Bruno Fernandes, who is a special, special footballer with his take, the control, the setup for Martial. And then, of course, it's 1-0, Robbie Earl. Now, control. I'll throw it back to you. At 1-0 at Old Trafford against a weakened Everton team with their best two forwards not available, don't the United fans deserve a team that can manage better? Now, whether it's managing to go and get the second and third goal or managing to keep possession to defend with the ball, I will say this, Rob, as I throw it to you, weren't we always taught and we had learned that the way to attack and play football is attack safely. Basically means get on the front foot, do your thing to try and score, but be very careful. Have insurance and be safe about it. Man United, again, another example of chaotic football a little bit and drama. Rebecca asks at halftime, what's going to happen? I said, well, let's see if they can manage the game. But I suspect there's going to be more drama. And there was.
Well, it's interesting you say that. And we've both done, I mean, we've done the UEFA coaching badges. I'm not sure how the USA ones work, but I'm sure it's similar. But when you do your coaching sessions and your phases of play, and you'll do some attacking play, the last thing that you have to address, the coach always says, is what is your safety? What's your security? And that point being, like, you've got overlapping wingers, that's your session. So you get some balls into the wide players. they come in field, your fullbacks go overlapping and you're getting crosses in and you're having chances and you're coaching that. And then they always say, stop, stand still, what's your security? What basically mean, what if they head it out and they're going to attack you, who have you got? And you have to have sometimes one holding midfield player or two holding midfield players or a centre-back who's coming in. You work on ways to say, if this breaks down, how am I going to stop the play or have to keep it in that half? It seems to me with Ollie, he doesn't think like that. I don't think they particularly think like that. I don't think there's that kind of, hold on, hold it here, what if? One of my coaches would say, what if, you know, as the corner's been taken for Manchester United and Everton have got everybody back, what if they break away? How are we going to defend? What if they hit us on the break? And I look at this Manchester United team, Robin, and I know we keep going back to it, and it's kind of like an old conversation, McTominay and Fred are not good enough. Right there is part of the problem. Not good enough, mate. And so you can skin it up many ways, and the team plays not good enough that they keep enough possession and is grooved well enough to keep the ball. But your two holding midfield players are not good enough. If they were available for transfer, none of the other top six teams would take them.
And that does hint at a problem with recruitment. And to be fair, I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, on the most part, has made some good recruitment.
Yeah.
But $100 million on Jadon Sancho, when you could have potentially used that huge amount of money to tempt maybe Declan Rice,
maybe Calvin
Phillips, Eve Bissouma, who at Brighton, it looks a special player. So that was his core. Let me throw and the Fred with the goal, with the counterattack, with Damari Gray. You know, there's three players around that should have been snuffed out. Let me throw this one, Robert. And there's something I read actually on social media about a comparison to Frank Lampard. And you just said it, that maybe Ollie doesn't think about the balance part of it or defensively ready for stuff. Do you think there's a comparison here? Frank Lampard, new players in, different expectation, and he couldn't really get the balance of the team. I remember clearly Rob was talking about it. They look good going forward. They get caught in the counter-attack. And like it kept happening, they tweak it, try something else. It was better. Then it stopped happening again. And obviously Roman Abramovich is like, no, I'm going to bring in a different coach. And it changed instantly. And we're at the situation now where Man United, a very talented squad, we need a different coach to sort of like, okay, here's my players. I got all these options. Okay, this is what we're going to do. And to end some of this poor management and giving away bad goals defensively, getting caught.
It's a really good point in that sometimes you look at the players and, you know, we don't know if it's the players or does the manager go in with the same group of players. You look at Chelsea, Rudiger wasn't part of things. Alonso wasn't part of things. Aspilicueta was in and out. All of a sudden they're, you know, regular players having a big part in things. It's the same thing, Robert. I was doing a little bit of research on United and talking, looking at, and I came across a stat that somebody said to me that everyone keeps saying like Fred and McTominay are not good enough. And they said, you know, when Sir Alex Ferguson was at Manchester United, and I think the famous win was 8-2 against Arsenal. Do you know the two holding midfield players that day? Tom Cleverley and Anderson. Said, no world beaters.
No.
But the team was set up in a way, in a structure, that those two did their job, and they went and won 8 goals. They said, so you can't always, it's not always like, let's go and buy this, let's go. You know, if they go and buy another holding midfield player, is that
Or
is there something else? Yeah. Is there something else then? You know, is the right back or is Wan-Bissaka not quite right? I mean, it's this group of players is good enough to go close to winning a title, should be in a title race, at least down the track.
Before we give some love to Everton, Rob, just one last point from me. And it's funny because I was with my son and we were like looking at this United squad. There's a ton of options, by the way. Mm-hmm. How about trying something different?
Yeah.
How about trying McTominay as a holding player and having a three-man midfield that might be Pogba, could be Bruno, could be Donny van der Beek, you know, or three at the back with wing-backs and play two up front. How about Cavani and Ronaldo? Or how about Greenwood in and around Ronaldo? Mm-hmm. There's a ton of options that the manager, I'm not saying that he starts chopping and changing all the time. But with this amount of quality players, like Tuchel, he went in there and like, okay, with what we've got here, three at the back, how about two holding players? So we stop the counter-attacks. It might be the similar at Man United. Go with three centre-backs, two holding players and let everybody else go forward. There, what I'm saying is there's other options.
Yeah.
And the 4-2-3-1 all the time.
Ready to
puts,
it, yeah.
Puts,
yeah.
puts Pogba in a funny spot. Mm. Don't trust him in the middle. There's other systems to try and utilise what he's got. And I wouldn't mind seeing a little bit of something different from Ole going forward.
I'll tell you one man who does know his systems, who does set his team as well, Rafa Benitez, Rob. Deserves some huge credit. Everton sit fifth in the league. Only 2 points behind the top teams. You know, they played, I remember they, seeing this result, they played a pre-season friendly against Manchester United, got beat 4-0 Everton, and there was a lot of talk on social media and a few of the blogs and that, you know, Rafa, he's a Liverpool manager, he's not the right guy, the football wasn't going well, and there was, I think people were expecting, you know, a bad start and get him out pretty quickly. There was, you know, that kind of talk. But I think even though, hard-nosed Everton fans would have to say that he's organised his team. There's a nice system of play. They play three at the back at times. They've changed it round. They put Jamari Gray underneath the striker when they need to. They play him in a wide position when maybe Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin are right. There's a system of play, Rob. There's an understanding. He pays $2 million for Jamari Gray, who looks 10 times better at the moment than Jadon Sancho. I know it's early, but I'm making comparison of like for like, wide players, young wide players. Andros Townsend is revitalised in that position that the manager's put him in. And this wasn't just about how poor Man United were or didn't control the game. This was also how Everton could have gone on and won it if Tom Davies takes the shot on, and could have been very different. So huge credit to Rafa and Everton.
Yeah, I mean, shape, structure, spirit, you know, to go 1-0 down and have the spirit to believe they can get back in the game and then have an opportunity late on when Tom Davies goes through right on goal. And listen, Yerimina's slightly offside. If he's not, it's a great play from Tom Davies. But how about going through yourself and trying to dispatch that ball and win the game for Everton? Absolutely agree with you, Rob. And Jamari Gray, his confidence is oozing out of his body with what he's doing at the moment. But there was some pretty special performances in this team. And also, you've got Rondon up front, a 32-year-old free transfer out of Chinese football. I mean, Anthony Gordon, a young 20-year-old player on the left-hand side. I mean, I know we've been here a million times with Everton and reasons to be excited. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying they should be excited, but they should be pretty content.
Satisfied, yeah.
That the management of this club is in a nice spot, and I imagine they'll be looking to carefully build the team for the future.
Yeah, there was a time when Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin didn't play and you think, oh, that's the end of Everton, but not at all in this game. And my underappreciated player of the week, actually, my friend, goes to Andros Townsend, scorer of the goal, imitating badly the Ronaldo celebration. I think went to talk to Ronaldo, got brushed aside because Ronaldo, I think, was more upset with his team and his teammates than he was with Andros Townsend. Townsend apparently ended up getting a Ronaldo shirt, which was great for him. And it was nice, Rob, to hear Townsend talk. One, in a way that he seemed to be enjoying his football, new lease of life from a player who, you know, we've looked down the years and said, you know, he's got talent, but he doesn't bring the consistency. He's scoring goals. He's making goals. He talked glowingly of working with Rafa and the responsibility and having a bit of pressure to win games now more so and have the ball that maybe more than he did at Crystal Palace. And the other thing that I thought was nice from Andros Townsend was his appreciation of Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah,
how he
respect.
Said how this guy is somebody I've looked up to, the way he works, the way he goes about his business. I thought for a modern day current professional to do that to another was a bit of class, actually. And he continued to grow on me, Andros Townsend.
Well, you know what? It, we'll give credit when credit's due, mate. And I don't mind putting my hand up and saying when I was wrong. I remember saying, whether on a podcast or in the studio, that Andros Townsend, a 30-year-old free transfer from Crystal Palace, was a nothing signing. It was like, what, you know, that's what I thought and I said at the time.
Yeah.
And fair play to Andros Townsend. By the way, what a lovely guy he is. What a smart and a great guy and a great talker he is afterwards. Three goals now, isn't it? And two assists in seven appearances for nothing, for free transfer on the right-hand side. Is brilliant. And I love the respect he has for the manager as well. Yeah. He's loving life. He's loving being a part of a team that's at the top end of the table and not the other end, which he's had before at Palace and Newcastle United. So great shout. Totally deserved. I underappreciated him. And it's great to see him doing so well at Everton.
Absolutely.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Let's move it on to Stamford Bridge, my friend, where we got an eventful game, Chelsea versus Southampton. Looked like it's going to be one of those Timo Werner days where the goal doesn't go in, the ball is not going to go in the net for a number of reasons, but we had all kinds of incidents in the game. Chelsea managed to find a way, Rob, to win the game 3-1, a little bit courtesy of a kind of dubious red card and maybe James Ward-Prowse with a yellow card that was upgraded to a red due to VAR. I know you were particularly unhappy with that, you watching that game, but Thomas Tuchel's team deserved the points.
Yeah, they did. The end, they took advantage of a call, which I thought was a questionable call, really. The yellow card for me was accurate enough. It wasn't a clear and obvious error where VAR should have said, well, hang on a minute, hey, oh, you give me yellow, but come on, this is a red. It's a yellow and a half challenge, right? So if he gives a red or a yellow, it's not clear and obviously wrong. So listen, we talk about, it's all individual, it's a subjective nature of these calls. And some you're going to get, some you aren't going to get. I just feel particularly for Southampton in this game because, you know, a team that's struggling, they don't have to show some spirit. They don't have to have a go. They don't have to press and try and play their football to create their own chances. And that obviously made all the difference. But that's when Tuchel and Chelsea took over, Rob. And some of the passing and getting in behind those Southampton defenders, the final ball in, those two strikers like rushing in on the goal. Of course, finally, Timo Werner gets his goal, and then a really nice strike from Ben Chilwell. They get it done. And from 1-0, you know, it wasn't managed perfectly, but they win 3-1. You know, we just talked about Man United being 1-0 up, and they found a way not to, to win the game. So, Chelsea, not super slick at the moment. Obviously, Timo Werner's getting a bit of a run in the side.
Yeah.
Callum Hudson-Odoi got a shift as well as one of those front players. Yeah. They could do with Mason Mount. Of course, did come into the
game. Came on, didn't he? Yeah.
And Christian Pulisic. You know, they need some. They need some other couple of players around Romelu Lukaku who's going to chip in with some goals and some, you know, really get involved in attacking play. It's just not quite on it in that final third.
I just noticed, you know, before watching Chelsea, and I've seen his name come up, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, my friend. And I've got a friend who's close at Crystal Palace. He was on loan there maybe about 18 months ago now, Loftus-Cheek. As a young Chelsea professional who couldn't make it into the team then. I think he might have been under Frank, early days of Frank. And he went on loan to Crystal Palace for a while. We saw him at Fulham last season. And my friend said, when you see him day in, day out in training, his words were, he's got everything.
Yeah.
He can run, he can head, he can pass, he can score. He's got good physicality and he's a good athlete. He said all the things you want in a modern-day midfield player there. He said, just hasn't quite got the mentality and the rhythm of playing games and having a knock sometimes and keep on playing games. He said he needs reps. He said if he gets reps, he said he's a real talent. Now, I suppose the worry I would have for Loftus-Cheek in a team like Chelsea is if you get in, it's hard to stay in and you're not going to get enough reps to kind of show the manager what you're all about. You know, how difficult is it? It's difficult for these young players, Rob, who's English, who's come through an academy, who's maybe not quite seen as part of the first 11, 12, 13. You know, where's he going to play his football? Where's his career going to come? Is it at Chelsea? Is he that level, or might he have to drop down and play on a regular basis? If he wants to start getting 400-500 Premier League games under his belt at the end of his career, he's going to have to start playing somewhere.
So you say, or was it Brighty? Who was it your friend of yours saying about?
Brighty. Yeah. Right, he's at Crystal Palace.
So he can't have everything, Rob, can he? I think I agree.
He needs to play and learn the game a bit.
Fair bit. He's not 18, 19 years of age anymore, is he?
He hasn't played many games, has he? You know, in games, Rob, where, you know, after a while, sometimes you get to an hour and you're a bit tired and you have to get through it. Sometimes you know to sit in. Sometimes you know the game's being played. These things you learn as you play. I mean, I was fortunate. I played from 17 professionally. So by the time I was 21, I had a good knowledge of and understanding. Some of these kids have only played youth football for a lot of the game.
Do you know there's a little comparison, Rob, I'm going to make, and we're going to try and get into the reasons for it. He's got as much talent, more physicality, like you said, he's got the tools to do everything, yeah, than Declan Rice. Declan Rice has got something between the ears that affects a game, that is determined to do the right things with and without the ball. I don't know whether Ruben Loftus-Cheek has the wherewithal to constantly affect the game on all sides of it. As a midfield player,
a good comparison.
In terms of tools, Loftus-Cheek's got everything.
Let me throw one at you, and I know this is some conversation we should try and have longer, maybe talk to a couple of young players. But let me just throw one thing at you: rejection. Declan Rice was at Chelsea as a kid and got rejected and went to West Ham. And sometimes rejection fuels you to prove people wrong. Because there's a steely, fiery determination in Declan Rice. It isn't. Now, I'm not saying there's some academy players, Rob, who have not played, kicked a ball yet and are earning thousands of pounds a week and have never kicked a ball or rarely kicked a ball in the Premier League. That can sometimes dim your ambition. And I'm not one to say don't pay the players. All I'm saying is make sure the balance is right. And so that hunger, the Declan Rice hunger is there, even if you're at a club and, being successful coming through the academy. Shouldn't just be a rejection that you almost like, right, I'm going to show you. I'm going to prove you wrong.
I mean, going to Crystal Palace, I mean, it's not a rejection, but it's like you've got to go and improve. You've got to go and take your game to another level to come back to Chelsea. Now, he's got an opportunity right now. And we'll see.
I think it's an interesting one to keep an eye on. And he has got the tools to do the job. Okay, my friend, let's move it on to Tottenham Hotspur at home to Aston Villa. A little bit of pressure building up on Nuno. Obviously, things not going quite as they would have planned after first three games, three wins. They managed to get the win this time. Lucas Moura, I think, going in, I think he actually went down as a target own goal. Huijbaer with a lovely first finish for Tottenham. Ollie Watkins bringing Aston Villa level in the game. Tottenham got the job done. I think it's one of those stages where results are more important than performances at the moment. Nuno wants to play and he's still this transition. I suppose the headline is good win, no Kane Premier League goal again. I mean, he got a hat-trick in 20 minutes in the whatever league, Conference League. But no goals in the Premier League, Rob. Does that... the longer this goes on, the more the narrative and the story continues, doesn't it? From the 120-odd million move to Man City that didn't happen, and now the Harry Kane who can't quite get his head around it.
Yeah, it will continue, Rob. I mean, I'm not... he's going to score goals quick soon. I mean, he just looks maybe a little bit flippant, Rob. We saw a couple of little kind of flamboyant efforts at goal. It's going to come. It's going to come. He's obviously a class player. I don't know where his mind's at. Not all easy to tell with Harry Kane. He's not one of those, Rob, that wears his heart on the sleeve. We can see how he's feeling at the moment. It's a really important win for Spurs. I mean, a really important win. I mean, it eases the pressure. It shoots him at the table a little bit. And he's still learning. I said this all the way through. Now, in this lineup, Rob, you have got Emerson Royal, who hasn't had a brilliant start, but he's probably going to be there starting right back. Christian Romero, the new player, who won Italian Defender of the Year last season, started the game. And I see that Harry Skip started as well in that midfield alongside Huijbaer. I think Skip and Huijbaer have got to be in the team. I know you want more flair, and then Ndombele started the game as well. He's still working through it, Rob. And I think, let's give him some more time, some more games, take a look. Again, Aston Villa are a dangerous team, particularly away from home. The counter-attacking of those Ings and Ollie Watkins. Watkins scored a really good goal. And then a couple of close attempts as well. That's a good win. That's a good win. And I think that just eases a little bit of pressure and gives him some more time and confidence to again, work through who he wants to use regularly. Dele Alli left out. Hasn't done much. I'm surprised because I'm a fan of Dele and I struggle to understand how he can't get near to what he was before. But Nuno's got to make big calls, and he is doing that, and he'll continue to do that and learn as he goes.
Yeah, it was interesting because I watched the Spurs game against Mura in the Conference League.
Nothing else to do.
Yeah, it was one of them. I just thought I'll have a little look at that. And it was interesting. The team, Dele Alli, started. He left Lucas Moura, left Sonny, left Harry Kane on the bench. Almost, I think, like, they're there if I need them, but we should have enough today. Well, scoreline got, they were 2-0 up, went back to 2-1. Dele Alli scored for the penalty. Got it back to 2-1, Moura, and all of a sudden it was like, big boys, on you go. So Lucas Moura goes on, Sonny goes on, Harry goes on. 20 minutes later, Harry gets a hat-trick. Dele Alli, interestingly, was one of the players taken off, Rob, which I thought, okay, wonder what this means for the weekend. Is he saving him? Is he thinking, not involved today, didn't get on the pitch today? If this doesn't start to happen for Dele, and I think we're both Dele Alli fans because of we know what he can be and the capabilities, but at some point, Rob, we've got to start saying it's a long time since the famous flick over the head in there. It's a long time since the 17 in a season. Are we being a bit nostalgic? I mean, is it another manager who still can't get it out of him?
Well, it's been a few now. Mm. And I think at some point, you're going to have to cash in and reinvest the money in a different player that can maybe be more consistent. I mean, that's the last thing I want to say. Mm-hmm. But you don't want to have a player that's, you know, expecting to do better things, giving him opportunity after opportunity. Yeah. I don't know. I can't figure it out. It's a strange one to me how he's not doing more for the team. Mm-hmm. I mean, he seems to be working a little harder, but again, you expect him to be creating in the final third and making those runs in behind that he always did and scoring the goals and arriving in the box. But no, it's a strange one. And Spurs now can maybe move on a little bit. And if they look better without Dele, that's bad news for Dele. Bad news when you're left out the side, and it's happened to both of us, I'm sure, at some point.
Yeah.
You're like, they're winning without me. It's not good. But anyway, good for Nuno. Good three points.
Yeah.
Good for the conference a little bit.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Let's take it to Elland Road, where the game wasn't overly exciting. Leeds got their first win of this season against Watford. 1-0 win, Llorente with the goal. It was Leeds having plenty of possession, actually creating enough chances, didn't quite take them, but the one goal was enough to get all 3 points. Siskos Munoz, who's started with Watford, 7 points from 7 games now. I remember I did a little bit of work on the team, thought it's quite a nice balance of young, talented players like Sarr and Dennis with the Sissokos and Kuka and Danny Rose at fullback. And I kind of was looking at him thinking, decent start by Watford. Look like they're going to be competitive this year. No guarantee of staying up, but look like, you know, they're going to be in around it. So anyway, we have the 1-0 victory to Leeds. Leeds get their win. Bielsa's a little bit happier for things and hope things will take off. And then, I mean, we arrive in the studio this morning, mate, to the news. Rebecca's like, the first thing, Munoz is gone. It's like, what? I mean, only the Premier League. But having said that, only Watford in the Premier League. I mean, I think we said in the end, you know, surprised. Maybe shocked is better, not surprised. Shocked that it's happened, but not surprised because it's Watford and that's what Watford do. And I know some people are kind of saying, well, it's okay, this is what they do. It isn't okay for me, mate. 7 games. And it isn't okay. A manager who's trying to find his way, who's got a team up, who's had a reasonable start in the league. It's like, well, if they didn't want him, if they didn't think he's a Premier League guy, thank him for getting us up out the league, see him off and get somebody in who you do believe in. But, you know, people don't realise, Rob, and we've both been in situations, the trauma that you go through when a manager changes in a football club, things change. Sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. But there is a trauma, there is a break in the club that has to be put back together. And they're talking Ranieri, possibly his favourite, we might hear in the next day or so, or others. But I just think it's a gamble every time you break that bond and then say, oh, this new guy will come in, he'll do it for the next 6 months. I don't know, mate. It just, I'm not, I was really uncomfortable. And my backer said to me, what do you think about it? And I kind of said, maybe it sounds a little bit flippant, but I'm really not bothered. What for the team that would bother me? Because I just can't take them seriously.
Listen, I spoke in support of the Pozzo family and what they've done at their football clubs and at Watford. And I understand the idea, the philosophy of regularly changing the manager. Now, when I say regularly, maybe after a season or two seasons, are we going the right direction? Okay, let's go somebody else. I think because the setup is the players, everybody knows that a coach comes in to coach the players. The players are brought in by the ownership and the directors of football, et cetera, but when you're talking seven games in, and you're absolutely right, there's no way they expected him to last. It's almost like, well done, Cisco. Like, great, we got promotion. Here's your reward. You have a few games. But really, as soon as they got any kind of material, and by the way, two wins, more scoring more goals than Spurs and Arsenal, I mean, and 7 points, that's form to stay in the division.
Yes, it is.
And they now want to do it to get an experienced manager in. So I am going to go for Cisco Munoz as my underappreciated performer, given what he's done in promoting this football club, what he's done in a difficult start, trying to integrate 12 new summer signings into this team, which is never easy. How many times have we talked about promoted sides, bringing loads of players in? It's not easy. And they've had a good start. Two games from two wins and a draw. Is pretty good. So underappreciated Cisco Munoz. And finally, before we move on, Rob, I researched in the summer about Watford when they get promoted. Of course, we're looking at how they play, who they got, and what's going on. And I saw a really nice interview with Cisco. And he is the most likable, warm character for an interview. And in that interview, I think Troy Deeney was in the interview as well, and was talking about how everybody loves Cisco and how he's been so warm and nice to everybody around the club. Tremendous man manager. Very fair with his players, and he was really light. So back to your point to finish on this, well, the players are like, well, hang on a minute, we kind of liked him and we're working okay, and now somebody else are coming through the door. And I joked on the set earlier, Rob, that if it's Claudio Ranieri, if he lasts the whole season, that'll be his biggest achievement as a manager.
Bigger than when you're
tall. Yeah, just to stay for 30 games at Watford Football Club. So if it is him, we'll see. But I thought that was I couldn't believe it. We walked in, Rebecca said, I'm like, wow.
You know, I mean, you made a big statement. You said that's probably the biggest sacking we've had since we took over.
The most ridiculous,
your actual words. And I almost, you know, it's almost like this club's become a bit of a figure of fun. And that's why I chucked in, like, listen, Ted Lasso might be there on Monday. I mean, it's just like anything could happen with these lot. They might have watched this series and think he's got some good qualities.
Yeah,
Ted Lasso, let's bring him into Watford. So we'll wait and see over the next couple of days who gets that job, mate. But, you know, I wouldn't be moving house and, you know, bringing the family with you because it might not be for too long. Let's take things down to Selhurst Park, where we had a really interesting game. I mean, Patrick Vieira is somebody we know, played against, got a little, you know, relationship with, and as soon as I get a chance to go to England, I'll probably go down to Palace and try and watch a bit of training, have a chat to Patrick, see what he's thinking. So I've almost got this fascination with what's Patrick Vieira, the Premier League manager, about at his team there. There's been a lot of changes. He's brought in some young players. They're trying to change his style of playing system. And they found themselves 2-0 down, Rob, to a Leicester team that's had a bit of a struggle of late in results across all competitions in Europa and in the Premier League. But Leicester got themselves 2-0 up, Iheanacho and Vardy, the two strikers, getting a goal apiece. And at 2-0, I'm not sure we saw 2-2 with Palace coming back and looking the more likely to win it.
No, game of two halves. And I think the goals came for Leicester on the back of mistakes from Palace in their attempt to play and to play out from the back. And this kind of style change that Vieira wants to bring. And I got to say, on the balance of things, it's doing all right. I know today, you know, the two goals conceded, you know, there's a mistake from Joaquin Anderson for the first goal. Yeah. They were a little bit advanced for the second goal for Jamie Vardy. But I am liking what I'm seeing. We worried about them because of the amount of change, new manager, new players, new style change, new philosophy. And that all those changes, I think the fans have enjoyed it, Rob. And you can sense around Selhurst Park, there's a good vibe and a feel around the football club at the moment. And that's why the second half was so important. Don't get bogged down with by carefully trying to play out from the back. That's the way they're going to go, and that's fine. But don't get bogged down. Second half, they weren't. They moved it through forward, and they kept on the front foot. They kept the game in Leicester's half. They didn't have to risk playing through the back in bad areas where they could make mistakes and it cost them, which did in the first half. So, great comeback. Michael Olise looks really, really good. Yeah. Aboutche Eze's to come back in the team as well. Mm. You know, Odegaard up front. Maybe we'll get better with time. I like what I'm seeing, but of course, you know, the league table doesn't lie, and they just got to be careful that, again, two goals here conceded were avoidable. If they brush up on that with the attacking talent that they've got, I think they're going to be absolutely fine.
Yeah, and I'm pleased for Patrick, because I've seen in a few of their games now this season, and they probably performed better than the points. I thought it was important they got a point, something out of today. I mean, you know, disappointingly drew with Brighton last kick of the game, almost for the Mopay equaliser. Delighted for that he puts two substitutes on. And one of them's brave, Rob, by the way. Conor Gallagher, to take him off and put Jeffrey Slupp on. You know, Gallagher's been the life, got the goals and made it happen. And he's decided that maybe, you know, he might be feeling a bit tired or he wants to go a slightly different way. And Slupp comes up with a goal, which will be satisfying for him and a bit reassuring. And if I was a Palace fan right now, I'd be feeling pretty good about things to a certain degree.
Yeah,
we should be okay, and maybe some exciting different times ahead. We know Roy, what he did and how he did it. He was brilliant and lots of respect. But certainly for Crystal Palace, I think the future looks bright, and Patrick seems to be enjoying the job and getting his message across to the young players. Manager who just, Rob, has had a bit of a tricky time of late. And I heard last week, and whether it was Luckman that, because Luckman came off or because Maddison came on, but the Leicester fans booed Brendan Rodgers or booed the situation last week. I'm not quite sure which of it was, but things not quite as we've expected from the King Power with Brendan.
No, it's surprising, isn't it? I mean, we know Johnny Evans is important. We know that Wesley Fofana having that bad injury was a blow, but I still didn't kind of see this struggle and lack of... Looks like there's a lack of excitement, Rob. And I sometimes, it's just something, and I'll get your take on it, Rob. I sometimes feel Brendan Rodgers, when he first goes into a club and he brings in these lovely, fresh ideas and he works really well with young players, there's a freshness about the team and the way that they play. And he's good tactically. Mm. But maybe after a little while, does that sparkle seem to go? And does he need to kind of motivate and make the team perform in a different way? Is there something in him as a coach, Rob, that's lacking? Or is this a load of overthinking it and they're in a bit of bad form at the moment or a bad moment, as they say nowadays, and they will get through it and shoot up the league?
I mean, it's an interesting question. It's an honest question. I still believe in him. I think I understand with the newness and freshness, and you do get that. And maybe someone suggested it's that, the reason why he hasn't had a big six job is because there's a period where it does all go good and then it drops off a bit flat. I think injuries have played a big part. Johnny Evans is hugely important for Fofana. We're thinking, you know, defending, they haven't defended well. So Iheanacho's not looked anywhere near as safe and secure when he's had to be the lead man with a different partner. James Maddison, his form's dropped off. Don't quite know what's going on there from possibly going to Arsenal in the summer. Can't get in the team. Adamola Lookman looks a better, more brighter creative force in the midfield. Vardy continues to get goals. So I'm not going to be as down. And I believe in Brendan. I think he's a good coach. I think he'll find a way to work it out as players get better. But yeah, a little test for him. Listen, I was saying it's a test for Patrick Vieira this season and his management and his learning and his handling of situations. Even more experienced managers. Brendan Rodgers won many things up in Scotland, had good success in English football. Before taking Liverpool close, but he's going to now show he can be a good manager again at the King Power.
Yeah, and defensively, said before the game in his press conference that we've got to get better defensively. Mm. That's not better. So, again, work to do. Just a quick, again, Jamie Vardy continues to amaze me, really, with his sharpness and his hunger and desire. At 34 years of age, he's got 6 goals now, Robin. I mean, 7 Premier League, 6 goals in a team that's not doing great. He is I think he's an inspirational type of player. I got to say that. maybe because he's got started in the pro game a little late, but continues to do the business.
Absolutely. I tell you, he continues to do the business. Thomas Frank's Brentford, by the way. I mean, I think, you know, people who'd watched and had seen a bit of them in the Championship, and I know they got beat in the playoffs last time around in disappointment, and then they made it this time. And I think everybody saw there's a story in Brentford, a little bit, not condescending, but, you know, little Brentford, small ground, they're going to have a good go, and hopefully they might be able to scrape their way in.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any scraping going on this season with Brentford, from what I've seen from seven games, mate. No scraping.
No, not. And just the way that they're playing is it's impressive. Mm. It's impressive. And the continuity defensively has been pretty strong. Just Christoph Aya coming from Celtic, that's played a little bit. It didn't start this game. And through midfield, Christian Norgaard, Rob, we're going to enjoy him, and fans are going to enjoy how he plays. He's one to watch. If you're watching Brentford, you know, everybody talks about it, and we talk about Ivan Toney and Brian Mbeumo. But just watch for the holding midfield player. Number six, Christian Norgaard, can play, can really, really play. Mm. And the manager, Thomas Frank, is smart, is intelligent, and he's doing what he said he was going to do. Attack as long as they can attack. Try and play entertaining football. But they've got a nice balance, Rob, between trying to play through and the option of going up to those front two. A system that they've grew from last year. Some canny signings. I mean, Yohan Wissa. I mean, what the heck? Like, comes on and scores every time, it seems, at the moment. So, I mean, that is a result. And looking at the way they scored the last goal, they're on the front foot. They're trying to take
trying
the game
to win the game in injury time.
Win
the game. 90 minutes on the clock.
The set piece comes in and they get it done. So, brilliant story. We'll see how it shakes out, Rob.
The Premier League we get to Christmas and it can hit you.
Injuries and stuff, it can hit you in the winter and stuff.
They look like they're going to be okay. They've got a manager who enjoys it, got a good relationship, knows his players. There's a hunger. The other thing about that group, Rob, there's a lot of hungry players. I mean, Rebecca said quite rightly that, you know, there's many players there you'd pass in the street, wouldn't know the Premier League players. Tell you what that gives you sometimes, a bit more drive and determination to stay in there. So people do know you and you do get on. And you know, it's what Leeds had last season, and certainly Brentford have got it in a slightly different way, the way they play, a little bit more structure. But, excellent result going away to a West Ham team that are in decent form themselves. So, good win for Brentford. Move on to Wolves. Wolverhampton Wanderers, who could do with a win, and they backed up the win last weekend with a 2-1 win against Newcastle. Raul Jimenez involved in both the goals. Great to see him back amongst involved in goals, scoring them and making them. Hee Chang Wang, the Bull. Looks like he's going to be a fan's favourite with the team as well, Rob, in the way he plays. Really great result for Bruno Lage. Steve Bruce, by the way, my friend, not so good.
No.
Not sure what's going on at Newcastle.
No. Yeah, it's funny, Rob, because this season, I know Lee Dixon and Graham Nassau in our pre-game show from England were talking about the quality of the Premier League in depth and the teams all down the league. And you're seeing new managers come in and be bright and be front foot managers and attacking managers. And Thomas Frank at Brentford is trying to play. And we know about Graham Potter at Brighton trying to play. Yeah. Steve Bruce isn't that guy. And I think the Newcastle fans, Rob, are frustrated that they want one of those guys. If there's one thing that we know, and we know what the Newcastle fans want, is a team that has a go and tries to play and has some flair players, which they have got. And I think that's a frustration. Now, are they going to struggle on with Steve Bruce? History says they will. The fans want something different. And whether you think of an Eddie Howe or the way that they play or somebody else out there, Bruno Lage is a good example of there's some good coaches out there, Rob. Good coaches that would love the opportunity to coach at Newcastle United. Lage is finding a way. Love his approach. Love his way of being more attack-minded than Nuno and doing it a little bit differently and switching out the forward players. And Adama Traore that was linked to some big clubs and switching out with others that have come in and done the business.
So,
I think they'll struggle on with Newcastle and he'll get some odd results and they'll have some disappointment ones and the radios will light up in Newcastle, the phones and stuff, and then they'll get a result. And I think it will just sway like that all season. I don't know whether that's right or wrong.
Yeah.
I know what Newcastle fans want. I just don't know how long Mike Ashley and the board are okay with the current situation.
Yeah, they desperately need Callum Wilson back. So Maximum playing at the top in the moment, but Callum Wilson makes him a whole different category. And if he can get back scoring goals, then chance for them. Let's move on to wrap things up. Brighton 0, Arsenal 0. A Brighton team who I didn't think played that well against Palace and got the 1-1 draw. Played so much better against Arsenal. This time had a 0-0 draw. Again, it's converting those chances, turning some of that possession into goals. But their structure, Rob, their play under Graham Potter is there to see. It's ingrained with what we now know is Graham Potter's style. You know, talking about the likes of Oli and Pep and that. You can see exactly what they're doing. I think we differ a little bit on Arsenal, and I won't speak for you. I thought there's a decent takeaway from Arsenal. Didn't play particularly well. Didn't create an awful lot of chances. The odd chance, Smith Rowe probably with their best one of a breakaway. But for me, what I took away from this game for Arsenal is didn't play well. The new phrase is you have to suffer and come through. I thought they suffered when they had to, and they found a way to get a point. And for some of these young players, the Sakas, the Odegaards, the Smith Rowes, they're still learning the trade. And sometimes I remember playing games and in a 0-0 like that, and it used to think, like, I'll shove that one away. Some days when I'm not playing well, just make sure I don't get beat. And I know what that is, and I know what that feels like. And I thought that was what Arsenal got from this. Some days when we don't play well, let's make sure we get a point.
I hear you. And yeah, that's one side of the argument. I just was disappointed that the team, the manager, couldn't find a way to change the flow. And to be fair, Graham Potter said after the game, Rob, in an interview, that's about as good as it gets from us in their general play.
Yeah, yeah.
And how they pass the ball. And they create stuff. They didn't score, so of course it can be better. But he liked the way they played. I think we all liked the way that they played in this game. But wouldn't you expect... And I know it's young, and I get your point, and a 0-0 when they don't play well. But I just thought it's a learning experience for those younger players, Rob. Yeah. You know, the Saka and Odegaard and Smith Rowe are talented. But is that a learning experience where, in away game, sometimes you've got to find a way to affect it and find a way to flip and change this flow and momentum? Let's get on the ball. Let's put a few passes together. Let's get them to struggle a little bit and chase shadows a little bit and force them back, and we can use our system over there. That never happened the whole game. No, I always say, Rob, it's a cliche. That's one of my favourite cliches. Like, in the game of football, two halves are never the same. They kind of were here. Brighton on top, forcing Arsenal back. It was a wicked night, weather and stuff.
Yeah.
But I was just a little disappointed that Arsenal, you know, they're going to be a footballing team, never got to grips with playing good football, really, in the 90 minutes. And... But maybe you're right. Maybe you take it on the chin. It's a young team learning, and they didn't lose the match.
Yeah, there's going to be learnings. And listen, they're well up for North London Derby at home with the fans in there. Maybe not so much away from home. And again, young pros learning the game, understanding the game. You take a point, you know, get to the video room, get back on the training ground and do some learning. All right, finally wrapped up with the final game of the weekend, Burnley 0, Norwich 0. Maybe not surprised, 19th versus 20th in the league. Norwich struggling for goals, Burnley not much better. Nothing great about this game, Rob. Norwich's point of view, I suppose it's the first point on the board for them under Daniel Farke. I mean, these are conversation to be had maybe about how they just almost waving the white flag in some respects coming up for me, mate. I just didn't feel like it should be okay to me just to accept that, you know, we'll probably go back down again.
Farke plays a nice style of football and Farke has got experience of getting them promoted. I wonder if now there's other coaches that played nice football with our squad and our philosophy could probably get us promoted as well and then make a bit of a better fist of it. Make a bit of a better attempt at staying in the league. I mean, I don't know. I don't know whether my narrative, when my opinion is going to change. How's it going to change? I mean, I'm sure the Norwich fans want to have a good season and then a season where they don't win anything or score any goal. I don't know. And Burnley, I'm assuming, Rob, that they're going to find the ways to win games and start scoring goals.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. I thought last year they might have a real struggle and get relegated. So this year I'm like, well, they proved me wrong last year. They're probably going to be okay again. Maybe they're not. Maybe they're not. But I do expect them to start grinding. And most of the players are fit for them, defending key players that were out early last season. But 0-0, enough said.
Maybe they'll make the international break, do a bit of work, restart and come back as we get into the month of October. Listen, mate, huge weekend of football. It's been a couple of days of great games, great action. No bigger than the game at Anfield, where we got a brilliant game of football, ended up on us even 2-2 draw. So weekend where I thought Arsenal hung in, Manchester United hung on, and Brentford won again. Don't forget the Fan Fest that's coming up in LA at the Coliseum. To get tickets for that, you can go to nbcsports.com/Premier League Mornings Live and get your tickets there. Come down and see me, Mr. Musto. Mr. Tim Howard and her ladyship herself, Lady Low, will be down in LA on the 23rd and 24th of October. And also, a note for your diary, my buddy Mr. Musto sat down with Jordan Henderson, two midfield maestros talking it out there. And look out for that interview. We're going to run that on our podcast next Wednesday, October the 6th. So look out for Musty sitting down with Jordan Henderson. Some great insights from the Liverpool captain. But for now, I'm Earl. He's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe. Stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him.
Good night.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.